GolfWRX.com. It's the newest episode of The Gear Dive. I am your host, Johnny Wonder. The Gear Dive brought to you by Titleist Golf, the golf ball, golf club juggernaut that it is. Thank you for sponsoring the show, Titleist Golf. You know, I've done like 60-something shows and I think like 80 total recordings for this little endeavor. And I love I'm at the point now where I get to bring back guests that I just love talking to. And this gentleman on the line has become a dear friend of mine over the last year, Mr. Brian LaRoche at Brian Golf on Instagram. Bri, how the hell are you?
Gardner, I'm like thrilled. You know what I saw on GolfWRX.com that I think it was Ryan said, our friend Brian LaRoche, when he used one of my pictures.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if that was Johnny. And then it wasn't. It was Ryan. But you are my partner. I would have said Cartner if it was you. And I caught that. What's up?
Nothing. Truth be told, I would use a different description. I wouldn't have put our friend. I would have put an oh yeah, Brian. You like thanks, bro, type thing. Made it passive like aggressive. I'm good. I'm in Carlsbad this week, doing some stuff with Callaway and doing a bunch of meetings and. You know, it's a good segue into what I want to talk a little bit about this show is just our lives, you know, just like being in the golf industry and, you know, you're in a different kind of stratosphere than I am. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that we're content creators, but I work for a website and you are what they would call a one-man wolf pack. So
a little bit, right?
Let's talk about how things have changed, you know, for both of us over the last year since we first met, because things have definitely changed, right?
Yeah, well, it's funny when you were talking earlier about, hey, do you want to go on the pod again? And I'm like, well, I always want to go on the pod. Frankly, whatever gets me a conversation with you, the only difference is today it's going to be recorded. So that
right.
being said, I was like, well, wonder if there's anything in particular we're going to talk about. And then I was like, screw it. I mean, I'm going to ask Johnny what's going on with him, because right now it's cool that time of year where you're pretty busy getting ready for what's to come. Mm-hmm. In the golf equipment space.
Yeah, it's a little goofy. And truth be told to the listeners at home, this is somebody I talk to. I probably talk to Brian, you know, we'll call it 10, 12 times a month, you know, a couple times a week at least. I'll either, you know, FaceTime you or if I just have a random question. So we've kind of become fast friends. But it's fun because I see, like Nico, who was on my show a couple weeks ago, like, people that are passionate about talking about golf, especially as passionate as I am, never gets old to me. It never gets old. It's always a fun conversation. So oddly enough, let's talk about new equipment. So I just came back. You're obviously a friend of Cobra. We'll call it a friend of Cobra and somebody that you work with a lot and endorse and this and that. And, you know, I'm not going to go too far into their new stuff, but you and I have both seen components of their new stuff. And I was, without giving away too much information, I was shocked at how good some of their stuff looks. Like, I mean, shocked. Because, like, I want you to comment on this. They're not like, they're a big company, but they're a small company. It's like a small group of people running a huge company. So talk to me about your relationship with Cobra and like what you're excited about coming into their next year.
Well, yeah, I got a full bag of Cobra, right? Everything but the putter. And if they made a putter, then I'd probably throw the putter in the bag. But I'm a big believer in the product, always have been. That's how I got into, you know, to save the story. Basically, I wanted to play Cobra. So, you know, that's how we got hooked up in that sense. But, you know, it's obviously this year gone a little bit further. It's not just, you know, me wearing Puma and me wearing or playing Cobra clubs and all of that. I'm privy to a lot of really cool information now, and I'm privy to a lot of conversations that I probably shouldn't be. But being that, you know, in the ambassador world and whatnot, I'm a club guy first and foremost. You know, I get thrown into those conversations. So, you know, we were all out there, you know, a few of us ambassadors, Coach Rusty, Tisha Lynn, Tisha Allman, I'm sorry. And then Blair O'Neill was out there, Sean from Golf Ball. We were all out there in June. And we were just filming content, right? Doing that whole thing. It's not my favorite thing. Like, hey, go be a model. And like that's not me, okay? But when they handed me equipment that is coming out in the future and I got to hit that and they had the cameras rolling, that's when I get excited, right? So I've been able to hit some of the equipment coming, not all of it. And I was in that moment, I wish I was Ricky Fowler, because I could have been like, I'm putting that in the bag now. And honestly, there's nothing you can do. Of course, if I said that, they look at me. I did say that. And they're like, yeah, no.
No,
but
you're not.
To their credit, it wasn't even finished yet at that point. So I got to kind of still hit a prototype, as we love that word, proto.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm pumped for what's coming. It's gonna change a little bit of you know, the what currently is in the line, I believe, is going to 100% improve, and I think that's gonna excite a lot of players.
Yeah, they're interesting because they you know, such a great group of people over there, you know, with Rachel and Mike Yagley and Luke Epp and Jose and T.O. And it's such a cool, a total motley crew of people, by the way. I mean, like, you know, you have ex-TaylorMade people, you have people from all walks of marketing. And like even Luke Epp, for example, like, you know, I didn't even know this until yesterday, but he played in like the 98 U.S. Junior Amateur. And because I talked to Nico a little bit about that on my podcast, and he's like, hey, I played in that. And I was like, you did? Like, that's random. But you know, it's a really cool company. And I think, you know, when you said something about, you know, conversations that you should or shouldn't be in, I think the reason why the golf industry is getting so interesting now is because you're in those conversations, or because people, I'll even throw myself in there, the general gearhead consumer that's not on tour is actually going in there and they're listening, you know, like, you know, when I was in there yesterday, they just kind of showed me some stuff and it was stayed quiet and wanted to get my initial reactions. And they're not saying like, this is it. You know, if you like it, great. If you don't, fuck off. That's not what they do. They're like, okay, what do you like about it? Like what grabs you? Like what, you know, where can we do better? Or what do you like about different products that, you know, this has, or maybe it doesn't? Like I dig that conversation because that's the way the market's going one, and it's making golf equipment better overall. I think the reason why every golf club company is coming out with fire products these days is because of social media. I think the club companies are starting to realize that they can't just market to the big box and then just hope that everybody flocks to go buy them. It's a conversation, right?
It's weird. Yeah, it's weird how that matters because there's this added level of pressure. You know, like what is everyone going to say about this? Because if you can get the majority of people to say positive things about it in, you know, their own social space, then, you know, your product kind of just grows naturally. And it's like free marketing in a sense. Obviously, you know, companies pay for, at this point, ads and social media ads and whatnot. But yeah, the consumer, I always say this, I'm like die hard on this. The consumer is the first influencer. So the more you can get the consumer talking about your product, and I hear it all the time, and that's something I've been really proud of this year, to be, you know, big into Cobra and Puma, is just simply, and I'm big into all brands, you know, as a custom fitter, you know, all of that. Like I'm big into performance, but super proud to be a part of Cobra Puma when I have all these people hitting me up, you know, randoms just going, wow, they're bringing it this year, man. They're like, you know, the bags, the major championship releases and all the special edition, limited edition gear, all of that. Like it's really cool. And so on the club front, kind of pumped to see where they're going, and I'm ready for everyone to see where they're going.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I saw a big portion of the line, especially the big ticket items. I saw it, and it's you know, just truth be told, guys, it's awesome. Like their needles pointed in the right direction. I mean, the big dog is you just got to see it. It's really cool, and it's not just like, okay, we did this year. It's legitimately, you know, it's a step away and a step. It's in the step in the same direction, but it's new. It's definitely new. It's distinguishable from the you know, the F9. So excited about that. One thing I need to say is what I love about what club companies are doing now, and it's not just Cobra, it's all of them, is they'll go, we want you to come in. We want you to test the product. We want you to look at it, and we're going to stay out of your way. So whatever you say, we're not going to like get pissed off of you if you don't jump up and down and do, you know, somersaults because our stuff's so great. They're actually like, we don't want to influence, and, you know, we're going to get you here. We're going to make it peaceful and fun, and you're going to have a blast. And we're going to feed you well and all that stuff. But ultimately, like, what you say is what you say, and we're okay with any of it. And I think that that would have never happened 5 years ago. They'd have been like, you better talk it up and you better make it sound like the greatest thing ever. And I dig that. I totally dig that.
Well, and that's what they want out of everybody, though, you know, like all the YouTube reviews and things like that. At a certain point, like, you know, if you start bad mouthing, and I'm not saying bad mouth, but if you're not like thoroughly impressed with something, then all those YouTube reviews and all that kind of mean nothing. That's kind of why I think a lot of them are going away and they're shifting how they do their content and whatnot, because at a certain point, you know, none of these companies want you to go in there and not be impressed. But at the same time, to your point, you don't always have to be impressed. You can look at the line and go, this is good, this is good, this is good. Everything's good. But guess what? Like, so is this company, and so is this company.
Right.
Right? Like, we talk about it. I mean, you know, sponsor your show, Titleist. I am so impressed with everything they have in the line right now. The new utility iron is like such a good club.
Right.
I think it's unbelievable. New hybrids. I've already fit players into those. So, you know, I don't feel bad saying that, you know, and I think everyone should have that kind of attitude when it comes to equipment. An open mind, you know, no prejudice, no bias or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, I think that companies are doing it right now.
Well, yeah. And they can't all make, like, and I said this to, I don't know who I said this to, some big marketing guy. I'm like, not every product you make is going to be a home run. So like, truth be told, like, you don't want them all to be home runs. Like, you want to prove to the market that you can make a mistake too, because if you're just putting out what you perceive to be the greatest thing ever, every single time, it's disingenuous. Like, it's okay if sometimes you're like, we took a winger on this, but like, we think this is a really awesome idea and what it could be the start of something really cool. But like, what do you think? Like, I like that. And I think it shows the market that the club companies are open-minded as well. It's not like club launch, this is the greatest thing ever, and there's nothing that touches it. It's like, and to that point, I think what happens also is from our lenses that we see, cause we get to see the people behind the clubs, you root them on. So like, the reason I talk Cobra up so much is, one, I think they make a great product, but I love the people there. So, and I know what goes in the hours and the, you know, the worry and the dedication and all that stuff that goes into making a product. Same with PXG. I know a lot of people over there too, a lot of the companies anyway, but you start to personalize the clubs with the people that make them. And then you start to root the people on. You're like, oh, way to go.
Yeah.
Like, way to go. And that to me separates, you buy into the story. And, you know, if you have 14 clubs and 10 of them are awesome and 4 of them are just like, okay, but you really dig the story, that's cool too. Like, that's really cool to me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I'm in. I mean, that's what's been really cool, you know, fan moment, like watching your videos, you know, the Disruptors series with PXG. That's been pretty cool to get, you know, a little bit of an inside look on what they have going on there. So kudos to all y'all and even PXG for doing that, just because I think when people pull the curtain back just a little bit and let everyone in, it just, you know, skyrockets their stock in my book, you know, as far as that goes.
Right.
I think that's where it's at, you know, and to your point, the people is where it's at. And if you get to know, like, I like Victor at VA. I like, you know, the whole team at Fuji, Chad and Brandon, man, Brandon's the coolest. He always calls me up and he's got this like SoCal like swagger about him. And then you got everyone at Accra, right? Like Gavin and his team, you root for all of them. You want them all to succeed because they're all such good people. But when the companies kind of let you in and let you know who's behind the door, putting these products out and putting the time and energy into the product, you definitely get a different take on the industry.
Right. I never wanted to put, like, I was always a big guy that was like, okay, I'm a Titleist guy. I got all Titleist clubs in my bag, for example, right? Not that's not what I have right now, but just for example. But what happens to me now is I want to represent all of my friends. So like, that's what my bag looks like, a Frankenstein sex. It's like, I got my, I got my Yags 3 and 4 iron, and I got my Josh Tolgi mid irons, and I got, you know, like I got my Aaron, my one Aaron Dill wedge, and I like I, they all, it represents like my community, and it's, that's why I got like seven brands in my bag, because it's just like they all have a story behind them to me.
There's so much truth to this. To let anyone know, like our personal conversation, I always just give you so much shit about your bag, just because I don't like, you know, like for me, I am like the tour pro guy where I'm like, no, I'm with this company. I want it to be streamlined. And you've got this mess of clubs. Like,
oh, dude.
You are a brand agnostic fitter's dream. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there like, you've got like four different sets of irons in your iron. I don't get it.
Yeah,
but
and I only have like 5 through 9. So like, it's like a five, it's like a 5 iron from one set and 6 and 7 from, it's a mess, but whatever. I like it.
It's such a mess, but it's you and you're right though. Like you do start to, you know, for me, it comes in the way of shafts, right? Like, God, there's a bunch of good shafts out there for me. And depending on the way I'm swinging, like some days I'm feeling Fuji. Some days I'm feeling my Acura. You know, and it just all changes. I'm like in the fitting bay, I'm on a Patterson kick right now. You know, you see all the long drive guys with Patterson. I'm out there like swinging as fast and hard as I can with Patterson shafts just because I want to be like Kyle Berkshire, and it's working. You know, so I get it. You know, it's hard to kind of take that 14 clubs and disperse it amongst your crew.
Right. That's just, you know, it keeps it fresh, Bri. We're going to stop really quick. I got to do a quick plug for a Titleist Golf, and then we're going to get back to it. I want to talk about the term influencer and that little, just that craziness that happened on social media. I want to get into that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's
going to
be
okay.
A bad conversation. And then I want to talk a little about your tournaments, and we're going to talk about some really stupid shit after that. So hold on. We're going to do a quick word for my sponsor Titleist, then we'll get back to it with my friend Brian LaRoche. Okay, we'll get back to it with Mr. Brian LaRoche here in a second, but I want to talk about drivers for a second. You know, the last few shows, we've talked a lot about wedges and getting fit for the wedges and the ball fitting and all that kind of fun stuff. But let's talk about the big bomber. Titleist did a great job this year. They have a driver for every single category. And for the first time in a long time, they have a driver for my old man and arguably a driver for my mom, which is in that TS1 driver that they have. I hit it. It's super forgiving. It's not necessarily for my profile, but Titleist typically in the past has had, you know, they're a players driven company. And a lot of it could be perception because they have products that do lend itself to game improvement, you know, in the iron space. And even in the Pro V1 and Pro V1X balls, those are definitely a general golf ball for the general golfer, but they've never really had a driver that really truly matched up with the general higher handicap, low speed person. And they have that in the TS1. And you know, usually my old man will ask me constantly, like, you know, what's the driver? What's, you know, it's always kind of like, well, you can try this, but then you got to loft it up, or you can try this one. And Titleist never comes to mind until now. And, you know, I want the higher handicaps up there. Are people that are looking for a little bit more speed, at a little bit of a lower swing speed, looking for a little more distance, a little more forgiveness, and just looking to have fun. That club, and I never say this about a driver, that's a golf club that might actually save you some shots because it's very stable. The ball gets in the air. It's super forgiving. And, you know, it's not necessarily at that handicap range. You know, hitting an extra 30 yards isn't necessarily the deal. It's hitting fairways, getting it in the short grass, finding something that's playable and easy to use. So I would encourage you to look up Titleist.com, go to an authorized Titleist fitter in your area, and look at the TS1. If you're looking for some forgiveness and you're looking to have some fun, check out the TS1. It's a great driver. You won't be disappointed. And look, like, if my dad can take it out and bang it around with his slice, trust me, the thing works. He's got it and loves it. So go to Titleist.com, find an authorized Titleist fitter in your area. Let's get back to it with Brian LaRoche. Okay, I want to thank Titleist for sponsoring the Gear Dive. Okay, we're back at it with Brian LaRoche, my dear friend. Okay, so there was like this I don't want to say I had fun following it because it was such a weird scenario. And what makes it sort of difficult for me is, my golf spy, who I know people over there, and I have, there's people over there that I really, really like. But their tactic, I don't understand. I don't want to say I don't like them. It's not like or dislike thing. I don't understand some of the things that they'll go out and do when they're trying to disrupt things. And they put out a post about, to the effect of like, influencers really not a real thing. And, some of these people that consider themselves influencers are kind of full of crap. And that was kind of the gist of it. That's kind of what they were trying to say. Like, if you consider yourself an influencer, you're not. Like, that's not a thing. And you need to
back off. the post that caught my attention was simply and there was more to it after this, but they just said, for all those considering becoming a social media influencer, don't do it. And that's like, and then obviously there was, the Amp Caddy, instead of just saying like Amp Caddy, they just said, don't sell your soul for a speaker. And, it went from there. Right.
Right. So walk me through, cause you had a really classy post. Like, I think you respond, they weren't necessarily targeting you, but you responded back to it in a clever way and sort of started engaging in a conversation. And it just turned into this weird thing, but the way that you didn't really leave them anywhere to go when you responded the way that you did. So just walk me through what that 24 hours was like. Cause it was bizarre. They even got paid, poor Paige Sporanic. Like, think what you want about Paige Sporanic, but she's a really sweet girl. And I think and I'm going to say this cause I don't know her really well, but I know her well enough. She's harmless. She's harmless. She's a really pretty girl that can really play. She can actually play. And she kind of got thrusted into the spotlight in the golf thing. And I still think she's trying to find her footing a little bit. But she cares. Like, she really cares about what she's doing. And she takes it very seriously. And it's like, she gets pounded on because she's a pretty girl as an influencer, right? The fact that she's a pretty girl and can play, like, she gets pounded in social media sometimes for anytime she speaks up on all of a sudden, they think that this is getting a little weird, but like, she comes from a really Christian background, which is totally rad. Like, good for, that's amazing. But she gets pounded for that as being self-righteous. And I'm like, that's not her. Like, and that's what drives me crazy about the social media thing is like, you don't know her. Like, have you ever talked to the girl? Like, that's not everything you're saying that she is. She's not, she's actually really sweet. She's doing the best she can. Like, give me a fucking break. So anyway, she got involved in that conversation and it got really funky, but tell me about your experience.
Yeah. Well, she gets involved. And then since, 99% of the golf world follows her, everyone sees her comment, because of the way the algorithms and everything and the way Instagram stacks comments, like, if it thinks it's relevant to you, it's going to show you. So Everyone obviously saw, her comment, and she's been, at the forefront of defending anyone and anything to just doing what you want to do. Right. For me, I sat it out for a few days. I really did. You say like 24 hours, I sat it out because I'm torn, honestly, Johnny. And, we've had these conversations, and that's just because it's like, man, like my golf spy, like I consume your data and your tests, like as a golf industry, nerd, as a golf equipment nerd, like I'm like consuming that kind of content that they put out. And deep down, like they're an influencer, and Adam could call me and I could go on their No Putts Given podcast and they grill me or whatever. And I'd be like, deep down, y'all are influencers, to the root of the word influencer, but my take on it was just like, all right, hold on a second. Let's think like an adult here. Let's be patient. Everyone's creating Instagram accounts, bashing my golf spy. And then everyone's, got Amp Caddy's back. And that's great. Like, I know John at Amp Caddy. I've worked with him in the past. I don't use the speaker because I've got a Puma speaker that I freaking love. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not going to sit here and say like, hey, your speakers, I'm never going to talk bad about a product when it meets my standard, But here's why I'm not good at this. If it plays music, then damn it, it's good.
Like, you're
is it like, purpose to play music?
that's like me. Like when I buy a new car, people are like, what do you look for in a car? I'm like, Apple CarPlay. It could be a fucking Pinto. It could be a Pinto with three wheels. If it's got Apple CarPlay, it's a good car. Like that's how I look at it. So go ahead.
So with that, you know, it was all about influencers and look, you know, I've got an 8-year-old son, right? You got a little kiddo. They're celebrities, they're people, they're influencers and YouTubers now. Mm-hmm. You know, they're TikTokers. Like that's just what they are. They're not Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie and Jennifer Aniston and all that anymore. You know, obviously you've got the influence of professional athletes. I think that's a different thing. But now, like, you know, my little kid, he wants a YouTube channel. You're going to put, like, if you want to be an influencer, you know, don't. It's kind of like, all right, well, hold on a second. We need more context. And that's sometimes it's easy. And I know this, you're always going for shock because it's a way to bring in good press, bad press. And for the most part, you know, when you're trying to gauge how relevant you are by reach and impressions and how many likes this post got, how many follows you got, all of that, then sometimes being the shock jock, the Howard Stern, is right. beneficial for you. And we all know that that's that role. You know, for me, I just sat it out and I'm like, all right, let's think like an adult. Let's explain ourselves. You know, and I took the M&M 8-mile approach, right? Like, look, this is what I do. I will tell you everything there is to know about what I do socially, career-wise, where I've been, where I'm at, where I'm going. You know, our tournaments, do we make money off of it? Well, of course we make money off of it. I'm trying to make a living by creating experiences for people. So don't guilt me for trying to make money. I'm not taking advantage of anyone. That's, everyone's satisfied.
I got to say something about that really quick. I guess this is more of a statement to anybody that's like anti, you know, make a dollar for your time. It's okay to make money. Like totally okay. Right. It's okay to make billions of dollars. It's okay. Like I always laugh when people are just like, yeah, but like you're doing it for the money. Yeah, I am. I'm doing a lot of it for the money. Like sometimes you do stuff, you know, for the love of the game, but like you can't do everything for free. You can't do, it doesn't work. I don't understand like why that's even an issue. Like why people even ask, like, you know, are you making money in your tournaments? What do you think? You know how much effort goes into putting a tournament on? It's hours and days of stress, and you do it with your wife. And it's like, if you're like if you're not getting paid and you're not making money, then you're dumb. Right. Like if you're just doing it because it's like, no, it's like fun. And I just love to play and I just want to break even on it. Like, okay, then you're a fool. Sorry, you're a fool. Like you should be able to make some money and that should be okay. With everybody that lives, that walks this earth, everybody's ability to go out and make a dollar, it should just be okay. It's fine. Everybody, the world's going to keep spinning around if people make money. Anyway, I'm done ranting. Go ahead.
Well, and that's what I said. When I start to break it down, like, and I did pull up my post. I knew you said we were going to talk about this, you know, before we went to Titleist. So I'm like, screw it, I'm going to pull this up. You know, I'm talking about the compensation. And I said, like, look, this is how creators make money. And in return, like, you know, hopefully make the brands that they represent some money. And there's nothing wrong with any of that.
No.
But to a certain point, I get where MyGolf Spy is at. And that's where I was very Switzerland. Like, I understand who and the type of, you know, tricks that they're talking about. Look, there are people that just spew shit out there, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it looks – to anyone that thinks I do that, I'm so sorry you feel that way. If you gave me 10 minutes to explain my process and the thought that actually goes into how I do it, hopefully you would change your mind. And if you don't, then we'll go our separate ways. That's okay. Like I lost one. And that's okay because I hopefully gain 100, you know, as far as people that trust me and trust my word and things like that. And sometimes I don't think because this is the wild, wild west, you know, influencing and whatever, gaining a buck for product and all of that. It's kind of new to some people. So I don't think they know how to really do it. I've said this before. I don't know if I said this the first time we talked, which was really the longest conversation we ever had at the time. Other than some chit chat through DMs, the first time I was on your pod. I just feel like some of them I want to just grab and go, I can show you how to do so much better. But nine times out of 10, it has the answer is always patience, right? Like,
right.
Just be patient and stop trying to do everything at once. You're giving yourself this look and you will get called out eventually. And that's all my Golf Spy did is they just called people out that did it. Do I think they were talking about me? Honestly, I don't think so.
I doubt it. You're not somebody, and it's not because you're so powerful. It's not that. I know those guys. I don't know all of them. I don't know Adam very well. I've shook his hand for 1 second, but I know Tony. Mm-hmm. Tony's a good dude. I know Chris Nickel over there. He's a sweet, sweet man. Like they're just golf nerds like we are. But
truly, yeah, truly, I think you know, sadly, I'm closer to what they do than what your average person that, you know, creates content on social media does. And I don't look, I'm in this weird space, right? Where I don't do the social media to like make a living. What I really do, my game with social media is hopefully, you know, gain an audience that trusts me and eventually, you know, fund our, you know, life, my salary, based off putting on great experiences and events for them. That's
right.
It. Like, it's not about slinging, you know, Watson golf hangers and things like that. Right. It's not about the super speed golf sticks and all of it, you know, it's just not, it's about my events. And, you know, we acquired the company Season Tees. So yeah, we're going to sell head covers and we're going to sell cool products and things like that. Like everyone else is doing. I'm just hoping that if I get behind a brand and I tell everyone, look, this is my brand. When you buy this brand, you're supporting myself and my wife and you're supporting our events, that people will buy it. And if they don't, then they don't. But to go back on it, like I am closer to what my Golf Spy or, you know, Golf WRX does in comparison to what an influencer does when they're going on paid trips, you know, doing these really cool experiences, you know, doing all sorts of things that involve not just their audience, but their talent and skill. I mean, we can say what we want about trick shot artists. There's a market for them, and damn it, I can't do it. So I let them go at it.
Trust me.
And I know
if I could do what that kid does with a golf club, dude, I would be selling my body everywhere I could. Cause that's a unique skill set.
And you should get paid whatever the market tells you you're worth. If you have a skill set that people want, you know, like Josh Kelly, Hole in One Trick Shots is doing, you know, with Paige, he's out there doing the, you know, Tiger Woods, the jam. What's the Tiger Woods jam deal thing?
We'll call it Tiger Jam.
It's Tiger Jam, right? Not to be confused with NBA Jam, which will one day be in my office. I will get that damn arcade. But
that's a
Tiger Jam, man.
Yeah.
Like Josh Kelly, Hole in One Trick Shots is out there doing, you know, that. He's putting on a show, a live show. My buddy Ryan, Coach Rusty, people will pay for him to do a show, and they should, because I don't know how many of them are there, you know, less than 10 that are like true trick shot artists. I don't think 20 years ago when we're watching the Golf Channel and Peter Kessler and then that silly golf trick guy, you know, doing, he's like a goofball comedian, like stacking balls on clubs and hitting them out of the air. Like nobody gave that guy shit.
No.
But now that like somebody who was a golf coach or was, you know, I don't want to put anybody on the spot. Cause I don't know Josh very well. I've talked to Josh, but the dude was like straight up working on a railroad or at the railroad or doing something in that industry.
Right.
And now he gets paid to do what he loves. Anyone and everyone, I implore you to shut the up when someone's doing that. Just let them do it because it doesn't affect you. And I get, and now I'm ranting, Johnny. Now you got me ranting.
Well, no, but this is important because it's not just golf. It happens everywhere. It's like somebody's going to go out and like, cause Nico's the first person. Nico Bellini is the first trick shot artist I knew that actually got paid to go out. Like he used to go to Peter Jacobson's tournament in Oregon and they would pay him to go out there and do impressions and trick shots. Right. And
yeah.
Make $2,000 or $3,000 for his time. And he was the only person I ever knew that did it. He was kind of like the first, you know, person that I really absorbed as like, oh wow. Like that's a cool gig. But the point is like, you don't have to, and it relates to clubs too. It relates to like what, you know, what I talk to the PXG guys about a lot, which is like, people just don't, you know, understand this, or they don't understand that, because people look at PXG, for example, and like, it's a billionaire. He's arrogant and he thinks he's just going to go in there and he just keeps throwing money at a problem. And he thinks he can buy his way into the golf industry. It's like, no, you don't know the guy at all. He came from the dirt. The guy's never, he's as smart as anybody I've ever met, and you don't have to like him, but don't discount what he's trying to do, because he takes it very seriously and he has got the gnarliest team in the world behind him. And even those guys are like, nope, Bob knows is as involved in this thing as he's not just a checkbook. Like, he is right. Everything. And if he goes away, PXG is not even close to what it is right now. Take away the money part. I'm just talking about creatively. He's like, this is the Bob Parsons show. And it's like, if you can't, you don't have to like him, but if you can't like look at it and go, okay, I respect that, then you're missing the point. Like, you're completely off. Anyway, I won't even lie.
You know, look, I won't even lie. I go all the time when I see, you know, what some of our peers are doing online and all of that. I get so excited for the opportunities that they get to be a part of, because I believe it paves the way for what I want to do. You know, like when someone said, hey, we're going to send you here, here, and here, it's sponsored by so-and-so, instead of being like, oh man, that should be me, I'm like, holy shit, you just, now the market has said that there's value to that. Now I can pitch my own idea, you know? And so, look, things like that, it's just how it's going to be. So either get on board, put your bitch in, or just, you know, keep your bitch in and be unhappy, towards people.
I'll give you an example, dude. I'll give you like a real honest moment. So like, I'll tell you how this whole Golf WRX thing started for me. So I was a featured writer, and I've already told that story on the podcast, but like, for me, it started like, I remember the day, I remember exactly what was going on. And, I work in the film business, and the film business is very, very tough. It sounds glamorous. It's not at all. It is a slow, pride swallowing siege. Like, you know, it's tough. It's tough to make money. It's tough to raise a family on unpredictability. It's tough. And I always noticed with myself, I knew I had a unique wealth of knowledge about golf. Like, I'm a golf junkie, and I just naturally knew more than most people I ever talked to especially when it came to golf clubs and tour stuff. I knew a ton of stuff. And I remember sitting to myself, like, I want to get into this. Like, I want to do it. And I have so many ideas. And I was sitting there, it was like a Sunday, and Jordan was sleeping, taking a nap with the kids. And for whatever reason that day, I just emailed Andrew Tursky my ideas. I was like, this is what I think you guys should be doing. This is what, you know, I would love to be able to do for you guys. It wasn't like they came to me, like they weren't thinking about me, but I'm like, I know those guys, that's the platform I want to do it on. It's, you know, that's my platform. And here's my ideas. And literally 2 weeks later, I was in Dearborn interviewing for the job, and eventually I got the job. Right. And then my life has obviously turned from there, but that all came with like, what the hell? Like, I'm ready. It's an industry. I don't have to think about what I'm doing with WRX, meaning like, it's stuff that I think about all day anyway. So I don't have to seek knowledge. I don't have to go out and seek a ton of knowledge to do this job. Like, most of it's like at the top of my brain. So it's funny because like, I laugh looking back at that and just go like, part of this job came out of like a love of golf and a love of what I do for my other job. But a lot of it came out of desperation of not getting stuck in something that was making me unhappy. Like, it made me unhappy. And I just made a decision. Like, I'm going to go knock on this door. They may let me in. They may not. I don't know, but I'm going to ask. And, you know, here I am, you know, 80 episodes later of a podcast and yada, yada, yada. And I'm so grateful for that moment, because to do stuff that you love, like, you got to let your nuts hang out in the air. And truth be told, like, the first ideas I pitched, what I pitched the WRX when I started and what the job has turned into now, not even the same job. Like, not even the same job. It's a completely different animal. And I look back on it and go, God, those ideas that I had before, like, those are fucking crazy. Like, like, wow. Like, that's
how it works. Though.
That's weird.
That's like how creative minds work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get, you know, so many crazy things, you know, just, hey, I want to work here. I want to do this. Like, I've said I want to do this, and then I've done it. So at that point, you know, you just have to go, well, anything, this is so stupid, but anything is possible, right?
Right.
You just said, hey, I want to create this job, basically. Like, this job that you have wasn't even like a thing.
It was not a thing. Like, for everybody out on Golf WRX, there was no, like, we're looking for somebody that does production work in golf that knows. There was not like a job posting. It was not like, to this day, I walked in the office and my boss, Aaron Martin, is probably like, who the F is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what just walked in here? And they took a winger on me. They took a huge winger on me, because like what I was proposing and the commitment that they had to make to me and to everything that I wanted to do was a big commitment. Like, and they took a winger, and I hope they're proud of what I do, but like, I didn't have a voice in golf. And although my voice now, you know, the website's voice is huge, but my voice is still very, I'm a spoke in a wheel, but I have a whisper, and like, that's plenty for me at this point in my life. I'm 42. Like, I'm totally okay with that. And, it affords me the opportunity to make a living having conversations like we're having right now. Like, that's the greatest thing ever to me. Like, I can sit down and talk
bitching and arguing about things. That's the conversation we're having right now, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. Then we're going to pivot off of that. I want to talk about these golf tournaments. So like, once again, the entrepreneurial spirit, the, you know, the ideas, the creatives, and just the hustle, because you are a hustler. Like, people call me a hustler all the time. Like, we are two street hustlers. I think that's why we get along so well. But you had these ideas to have these kind of highbrow, fun, interactive tournaments. And I played in one, the Battle of the Beach, which was, you know, as fun on a golf course as you'll ever have. But talk me through like the inception of these tournaments and where these things, where they started and what they are now. Cause it's like a big deal now, like a year
it's
into
a thing.
It's a big deal. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's a thing, man. And we're proud of it. Like, we're so proud of it. After every event, we're proud of it. You know, we look back, my wife and I, Mel, we look back and we go, did that just happen? Did we just do that? You know, in three days, did we have that much fun? And obviously, you know, when you're hosting the tournament, it's a little more stressful, and you lose focus at times on the golf, and you do question like, okay, well, I'm really busy and I'm stressed, but all our players are having a blast, right? And then you get that confirmation and everything is good. But you touched up on it earlier, right? When we were talking about it's okay to get paid to like put on a tournament and all the work that goes into it. It originally started a year ago at this point. With the Players Cup, all that was a weekend for me to get people together and play free golf, right?
Right.
Like, you know, I negotiated, hey, I'll bring, you know, 48 or 28 golfers to your course, but I just want to not pay. And then it turned into like, hey, that was a big success, actually. So let's do another one. And that's, you know, where Battle at the Beach came about. And it's so funny, because that's the first time, you know, the PGA show, we hung for 20 minutes tops, right? Maybe, you know, on multiple occasions, we were around each other for 10 minutes. But then it hit me. I was like, Johnny needs to come be my partner. Like, I need to spend more time with Johnny, and I need a partner. So, you know, we did Battle at the Beach, and that was so cool. For Mel and I to have the group of people we had, to introduce you to a couple people. You know, I know you've talked to a couple people that were in the event, but then to get you face to face with them and then get this person face to face with this person. And there are people from these events that never knew each other, and we partnered them up, and now they're friends. Like, not just friends, they're like bros. It's like us, you know, like you'll FaceTime me and I'll be naked in the shower and I'll still answer.
And I'm thankful for that.
But of course, I'll hold the camera at the proper angle.
Of course.
Always the most flattering angle. But with that being said, we did battle at the beach and we knew, all right, well, let's do another one. And we did a Stableford event that we called the Stableford at Innisbrook. And it was a few less players. I mean, it was July, it was hot, whatever excuse you want to, ring up for not as many players, but the event from a financial success, since we don't make a ton of money, if any, off our players, we kind of put all that money back into the event. It was just as big of a success as Battle at the Beach and the Players Cup. And at that point, we just said, all right, this is what we're doing. It's not just going to be three tournaments a year. We've turned it into something that I just, when you're sitting there talking about, like, I'm going to pitch this idea to golfwrx.com and they don't have anything in place, I'm just going to make this shit up and they're either going to like it or they're not. That's what I'm doing right now. And that's what we've done. So we now have, we've acquired this company. We've called it Steve's and Tees. It's going to be our umbrella. We'll create content under there. We'll sell all sorts of golf swag. We'll sell, discount clothing, golf apparel, all brands, as many brands that we can touch. We'll sell all that at good prices at steesandtees.com. We just saw the preview today. It's just a couple weeks away from getting launched, but that's where we're going to run all our events through. So it's not just like Mel and Brian's events, right? We put them on, but we understand as a business, like, that's not going to fly. It's very hard to get someone from across the country to Venmo you or PayPal you money for an event that has no link, no website. Is this Fire Festival 2.0 or what is it?
Especially if they look you up online, because it's a lot of your old radio day pictures. It's like, okay, this guy for sure sells a bunch of cocaine.
1,000%, right? 1,000%. Even had a stint in Miami. This guy has done everything but attend Ultra Music Festival. I will not trust him with my $1,000
and my 50 million yen, because he looks like.
So, all that being said, I'll just give you the list. In we've got the Players Cup here at Reunion Resort again. It's going to be the Ryder Cup style event that everyone got, a lot of value out of last year. And it's the one that got enough attention to bring us to Battle at the Beach at Hammock Beach, the one that you played in. So we're doing Battle at the Beach again. That'll be in March. We are doing Battle at the Bay, which is in Las Vegas. That is the first couple days of May. So April 30th through May 3rd, there's going to be a welcome party. Right now it's scheduled to be at Topgolf. Topgolf's very stingy with their scheduling. So we just have a tentative, welcome party at Topgolf. We're going to spend some time on the strip with, later in the day tea times, accordingly, obviously. So that way people can enjoy the strip. But that'll be Battle at the Bay, will be a Reflection Bay in Las Vegas. And then we've moved the Stableford. It's now in June and it's at Pinehurst this year.
Oh God.
Or next year, I should say. It's at Pinehurst in 2020. We're going to do three rounds of golf, number four, number eight, and then the Cradle will be a part of the event. And then the Cradle, remember at Battle at the Beach, how we did a shootout on the 18th hole,
mm-hmm.
that we lost in. Yeah. So we're going to do that, but we're going to do it on the Cradle. So we're going to have a 9-hole playoff to decide the championship. And then because of the person that's coming to Pinehurst, they want to play number two. Well, from everything I've done, yes, I want to play number two too, but all the research I've done, it's too fucking hard. So we're right. going to play number two, but it's not going to be a part of the tournament. And it will be a preferred rate. I'm doing a little air quotes. We'll do like a preferred rate. And that'll be like our wind down round on the next day. So everyone will get an opportunity to play number two. And if they don't want to play number two, pay the money. Even if it's, a good deal, we'll go to Tobacco Road or we'll go to Dormy Club, something like that. And then the one that is like the low key, everyone is going to just be so stoked on this as like everyone's already excited. We're coming to Michigan. We're going to Forest Dunes
and it's going to be called Battle at the Loop. And there is a golf course there. I'm just going to pretend that nobody knows this. The Loop is a reversible golf course. So on one round, you play it in one direction, and then in the next round, you play it in the opposite direction.
Wow.
But it's the same 18 holes. And then that's just a story that we want, you know, obviously our players to everything we do, we want it to have some connection, some kind of story. And the Loop, obviously, is the draw. Forest Dunes is already a top-ranked golf resort and golf course, so we'll play Forest Dunes as well. And they just built a short course. The same dudes that shaped Winter Park, the little Winter Park 9 in Orlando, they did the short course, 10-hole short course.
Okay.
So we're going to have like a match play for the championship. There's going to be like a Final Four kind of match play tournament for Battle at the Loop. And then we'll do the Players' Cup again, which that one practically is waitlisted. It's sold out. It's our marquee event. It's a Ryder Cup event. And all our players, the only way to get on that wait list is to play in another one of our events.
Gotcha.
So that being said, we have 5 official events. And the thing that I am like most proud of, and I know I've just been ranting about my schedule so far for next year.
This is great, man.
Dude, so I'm from Indiana. I'm a proud Hoosier. The number one course in the state of Indiana is Victoria National Golf Club. And they just had the Korn Ferry Tour Championship there. And it was on full display. It was on the Golf Channel. The golf course is, you know, normally the hardest golf course every year on the schedule. It is ridiculously hard. It was built out of like, you know, these mines or whatever. I forget what you call it. These big pits. And they built a golf course on it. I believe it's a Fazio design. It's just this gnarly golf course that eats you alive. And the pros on the Korn Ferry Tour, you know, shout out to my buddy Chris Baker, got his PGA Tour card with an 8-footer on the last. He like watching him, he hits the ball so straight. I mean, he literally is going to like be a top 10 player on PGA Tour as far as his, you know, strokes gained driving. And this course, you know, would bite him. You know, it's biting the world's best. We are actually going to have a point system where the winners of all of our battles, the three battle at tournaments, those winners will qualify for a season ending event called the Victational. And you will also acquire points. So say someone plays in Battle at the Beach and they play in the Stableford. And they are on a points list, right? Depending on how well they do, that can get them the wild card spot to play at Victoria National. Now, the trick with it, so we're going to have 4 teams. It'll be Final Four. You'll play match play, best ball, 18 holes. And then, you know, there's going to be a championship match and there's going to be a third place, you know, kind of rubber match, right? Toilet bowl match.
Right.
And so you'll get 36 holes of golf with accommodations. Thanks to the Dormy Network, they are hooking it up. That's it. So the winners of our events will win a free stay and play at a golf course that, unless they are a member of the Dormy Network, they couldn't play otherwise.
That's
amazing. That's going to kind of cap off our year. So I've got a call to get the date finalized for the Vacational, and that's it, man. Like, that's 5 tournaments plus the Vacational. And I hear a little rumor that we are working, like, we're going to try and get a tournament in Canada, right?
We're going to figure that one out.
We got to try something.
We're going to try and figure that out. Some sort of a Canada versus U.S. Ryder Cup style tournament.
Something.
We're going to do something.
That being said, man, that's my rap sheet. Like, if someone's made it this far, I'm sorry for the sales piece, but I can tell you, if you talk to any player, not counting Johnny that's played in our events, it is worth every dollar, and they're pretty affordable, and we get some pretty good relationships out of it.
Yeah, camaraderie in spades. Like, that's what it is. It's like, just, it's just fun. You get to know people. Everybody becomes like instant brother. And I had a blast. I mean, it was, So that's the best thing I could say about it. I think I texted you that. The easiest way to explain that, it was just, it was a good time. Like, it was just a through and through all the way from start to finish. It was just a good time. So,
I don't even know, you know, like, how do you even wrap that up? Right. You know, as far as just each event, you know, like I go into, cause think of it, you know, like Johnny, you get to do a lot of really cool things. Right. But think of it for like the two or three guys or four guys that are going to do a buddy's trip. And they're just going to go to like, all right, well, let's go to Myrtle Beach or let's go to the Robert Trent Jones, whatever, the trail in Alabama or something. And they're going to do like their buddy's trip. Right. And it's going to cost them whatever it costs. Or they can come to one of our events, turn our event into their buddy's trip, which so many players do. And it'll barely cost them more money. They're going to get value out of it because we always bring something to the table as far as, you know, a welcome package and, you know, from our sponsor. We have so many good sponsors that support us and what, you know, we wouldn't obviously be able to do the events without them, not, and we wouldn't be able to make a buck, obviously. And we want to be able to connect people with brands that they otherwise never would have really experienced. So, you know, our whole thing is like, take your buddy's trip and just turn it into this and you'll thank me later.
Right. Yep. That's it. That's a hell of a sales piece there, Big Cheese. That's pretty good.
I'm almost out of breath. If I didn't do this for a living for a lot of my years, I would tell you I'm almost out of breath, but I can keep going, man.
You can talk as much as I can, which I, you know, it's a gift.
It's a curse. It's a little bit of a curse. Let's be real. Come on. Sometimes
it is, but
it's an acquired taste.
It's an acquired taste. Okay, we're going to wrap this up, but I want to talk a little bit about your bag. So I know you're all Cobra, but you've been making some tweaks to your bag. I know you've been like swing weight obsessed. So talk us through, where's your bag at now? I know you've made some shaft changes and top to bottom. And I'll tell you what's in my bag and you can tell me what's in your bag. Go top to bottom. What do you got in there?
What's in your bag? Oh, let's see. Hold on. I can give Johnny's bag for you. Let's see. We've got a Srixon 4 iron. We've got a Cobra 5 iron. We've got a Titleist 6 iron. we've got an Alien wedge and a new Jaws wedge, the dot R dot special. You know, like we've got all that, right?
I got the hammer in my 3-wood. I'm
joking. I saw you hitting the hammer. Oh my God. Real quick, is that thing worth the shit or is that just awesome?
No, it's to be able to just hit a ball and go pow. Like that's literally what the whole thing is.
It automatically happens. It just comes out of you. It's crazy.
It's not a golf club. It's not a golf club. It's something.
Someone needs to have an event where they have a hammer long drive contest. Like they even sponsored by the hammer, John Ham or whatever the guy's name is. I don't know his name.
Frank Ham?
I don't know, man. All I know is somebody needs a long drive event and it's just sponsored by the hammer. And everyone's like, how do I still get this hammer? And it's like, honestly, the company folded. You got to go on eBay. Yeah. Well, how are they sponsoring it? Honestly, we don't know.
We just got a check in the mail and it's if it works, it works. Okay. What's in your bag?
All right, driver hasn't changed. I got the F9, still love it. Shaft has changed a little bit. I've got Acura TZ6 in the back, and you know, custom colors. If you didn't know, Acura can do custom colors. So I'm a Pacers fan, blue and yellow. Big fan of the blue and yellow, the blue and gold. So, you know, got that customed out. Still rocking that F8 Plus fairway wood, man. It's not going anywhere. It's just not.
Okay.
You know, I like it. The middle of the face is worn out, so it's kind of like it just makes me feel good. You know, right. Like, wow, if I hit, even if I don't ever use my 3-wood, if somebody just looks at that and they're like, oh, this guy can play, and then they see me play, it's like, oh, never mind.
You play, you're doing just fine. Okay, what else you got?
let's see. So I got this the Cobra Utility Iron, and I have this love-hate relationship with it. So I got to figure something out on the Utility Iron. I may be gaming a long iron in a future set that they have. I'm just winking. That's something that really could happen. But and then irons, I've always had the King Forged, either a CB or MB combo, and then
I played with the MBs for a while. But as I noticed, and honestly, Battle at the Beach, the conditions were super firm, and I feel like I broke my elbow digging into the ground with my MBs. So I started playing around with the CBs. And so I got a set of the CBs, and they just, honestly, they perform. I really don't know how to go nerd on you. They just perform, right?
Right.
So I've got CBs. I have toyed around with them a million times. So I used to be a C taper 130X guy, but I just like go back to like the US Open qualifier, and I hit the best 5-iron of my life, right? It was like a 5-iron that was maybe 15 yards high. It was nothing. It was a bullet through the wind, and it just pierced all the way through the green. And I'm just like, damn it, I need to get something that gets the ball up a little bit more. Right. Yeah, I just do. And so I went to Nippon 130X. Nothing quite feels like a Nippon, so it took me a minute to get used to that. But going from C taper to Nippon was a lot bigger of a difference than going from Dynamic Gold X100 to the C taper. That was a little closer in feel. But so I got the 130Xs. Don't see them really going out of the bag anytime soon. Still have, you know, the raw wedges, the Wedge Wizard specials before he jumps ship, man.
Yeah.
Congrats to the wizard.
Saw him yesterday. He's all Hanmed out now.
I love it. So proud of him. So happy for it.
Yeah.
Just awesome. A good company making good stuff. And they just got a rock star that, you know, is going to do a lot of really cool things for them. So, you know, I got the versatile grinds and all my wedges marbled out, you know, my wedges are either marble stampings or Pacers stampings. And then, so putter, I've got a Seymour. This is where I've changed the most since we've met in the bag. I fit myself like 5 times for a putter, and every time it was like, dude, you need center shaft, somewhat face balanced. And at the time I was playing a spider with a short slant with some toe hang on it. And that, as much as I love the look of it and love the way it performs, I knew I was just doing, I wasn't properly fit for that putter.
Right.
And so I ended up, you know, working with Cody Hale at Seymour, great dude. Went and saw him in Nashville, even got dialed into a Seymour, and it's massive. Thing is massive, dude. You can see it on my page. It's like the biggest putter ever. But I, you know, I'm intrigued. My buddy Bake on the PGA Tour, he was pulling out this lab putter, this directed force. Are you familiar with the directed force?
I've heard. I've never actually seen one in person, but I know what it is.
God, it's a monster. It's like so big, probably ugly, but the face just doesn't move. So I'm playing around with one of those, but I think putting is an acquired taste, you know. So that's the bag, really, man. I don't see things changing unless, you know, Cobra comes out with something hot that I just got to put in. Like, obviously, whenever the new fancy driver comes in, it's probably going to perform better than what I have, I'm assuming. So that'll probably go in the bag, but that's really it, man.
Well, that's a bag. That's a nice
bag.
I can't even, I don't even begin with my bag. So like I go back and forth between my F9 and a TaylorMade driver. I actually, Sevi threw my F9 driver down the stairs. So I'm pretty sure that the face is cracked, the crown's cracked, because we have really hardwood stairs. And he was running around, like I was chasing him around the house because he had it. He pulled it out of my, because I had my clubs in the bathroom. Like, it's a weird, my house is weird, but my, there's a room, it's a big, huge bathroom, and my closet's in there. So sometimes I'll leave my bag in there if I have to go put him in the car later. And it was lying on the ground, and he pulled the driver out, and I saw him, and he knew I was going to come and take it away from him. So he started running around the house, and his idea of being funny is like right before I get him, it's like with a crack addict when they're going to throw crack, like they're getting chased by the cops and they throw it like at the last minute. He did that, and he threw my driver down the stairs, and there's like a huge rattle on the head now, and I'm pretty sure the head's cracked. So anyway,
My God, you just compared Sevi to a crack addict, and I get it. I understand
that's
reference.
What it looks like. That's what it looks like. So I have an M5 right now. with a Tensei white, but I'm playing with shafts right now. I'm going to start messing around with a Ventus shaft and maybe some different, I got to find something playable. So the Ventus shaft's one I'm really curious about.
I think it's so good. I think it's so good.
And then I have a M6 three wood, with a Tensei white 70 TX. Then I have an M5 five wood turned up to 21.5 degrees. So it's a seven wood and it's cut down to 41 inches. So like my bag's all centered around yardage. So like, it's not to loft, it's to yardages. So for me, it's, you know, normal conditions, my driver carries 270 to 275. My three wood carries 245 to 255. My seven wood carries 225, you know, 220 to 225. And then the longest iron I have in my bag is a five iron, but it's bent pretty strong to like 24 degrees. So that's like my 200 to 205 club. And then, so I have a Srixon Z585, five and six iron. And then I have a Cobra Forge Tech 7 and 8 iron. And then I go back to a Srixon 9 iron. And then I had a 9 and pitching wedge. And the reason the 7 and 8 iron I got the Cobras in there is because they literally, the 7 iron goes one, carries 162. And the 8 iron carries 152 or something. I forget what the yardages are, but like they have like a very specific purpose or it's something like
that. The bag just makes me so angry.
Yeah. So then I have a 50 degree raw mill grind tailor-made wedge. And then I have a 56 and a 60 high toe. I got the 60 low bounce high toe, which I don't think you can get in the stores. But the difference between the high toes that you get from the tour trucks and the ones that you get in the store is the faces on the high toes are raw. So the new wedge line that they came out with a raw face, the high toes off the tour are all raw faces.
That makes sense.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
And then I have I call it my Frankenstein club. It's a 64 degree Callaway PM grind 64 with a Fujikura MCI 125 shaft in that thing. Like that thing's actually saved me shots. Cause I'm a really shitty iron player, or I have been in the past. So I short side myself a lot. And that thing has kept me out of the 80s more times than I can care to admit. And then I'm actually messing around with a Spider X right now.
I really like it.
So I'm messing around with that, but that's what I got. And I play a Pro V1X golf ball. There you go.
Hey, so yeah, I'm a Pro V1 guy and I honestly, ever since the new one came out in January, I haven't switched, but I'm lucky enough. I got those left dashes like 6 months ago from my buddy. And, those aren't so bad, but man, it's so tough. You know, you think that they're supposed to go lower and like spin lower and launch higher, like everyone says, but you just literally never know until you go test it. And like, I'm such a bad person to test golf balls. Like they all do the same thing for me. And so I just go with whatever feels best.
Well, yeah. See, for me, like I don't hit it like you do. Like you hit it really hard. Like you're a 119, 120 swing speed guy. I'm like a 105 to 110 swing speed guy. So like we play on, you know, different parts of the planet. But for me, like choosing a golf ball for me is always the first hop on like a 70 yard pitch into a green when you're hitting that little spinner. I like a ball to sort of skip and stop. And that golf ball for me does that. And whenever I've ever tried any of their golf balls, like a Bridgestone or even the TaylorMade TP5, I love that golf ball off the driver. And I really like it like with the longer clubs, but around the greens, it hops up and I like it to skip forward.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you.
I like that, you know, and I can say like my whole thing is because in the ball department, you know, if we're going to talk about like balls, I could play any ball, right? Like I don't have to play Titleist. I just do. But my whole thing this year has just been play the same ball every time and like don't look back, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like the most disciplined I've ever been is we're 9 months. Like I'll go the whole year playing nothing but this. Now, January is going to come and everybody's going to drop new balls and that might change things, but you know, I'll stick with what I got for now. Cause it does what I want it to do. Oh, it's not, I can't make the ball do what I want it to do.
it does what I know it's going to do. Like, it just does the same thing all the
time. Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me. The TP5X and the Pro V1X for me are like pretty damn close to apples to apples. Literally all comes down. And I don't, like I said, I don't stripe it. Like, I can tell what a golf ball is doing 40% of the time, because usually I hit it thin. So it doesn't matter if it's a pinnacle or like, it doesn't matter sometimes, because I hit it like center thin most of the time. But when I am playing well, I can tell what the golf ball is doing. And like, for me, like the TP5X and the Pro V1X, like those two golf balls are phenomenal for me. And I just been playing it. I mean, I'm like a Titleist fanboy when it comes to golf balls. I have been since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So that box,
I'm okay with that.
That box will always call to my heart. Like, there was something about getting a Titleist, a black black and gold Titleist Tour Blata box when you're a kid for Christmas. And I believe that part of the Titleist thing, although that, like, that company as a golf ball company is a monster, and I don't think anybody will ever catch them, because they have, you have to see it, dude. They got, it's like a NASA lab. So in my opinion, not only do they have all the market share, but they have the infrastructure to not touch. It's like, you're never going to, I don't care how much money you're going to throw at the problem, you're never going to compete with that. Like, you're in this little town in Massachusetts, this ball plant takes over the whole town, and people are flying in from NASA, and all these other brainiacs are coming in there like rocket scientists designing these golf balls. Everything's made in-house. Their quality control is frightening. Like, is there golf balls out there that fly further? 100%. But they have box envy, and they have real, real smart people making their golf balls. So they're like, it's just a hard, Titleist golf ball, dude, is like an immovable object. It's just, you're never going to.
Yeah, it's tough, right?
You can't, like, I love when people are like, oh, their balls are okay. I'm like, no, they're actually pretty amazing. Like, if you don't think that they're amazing, then you're a fool.
I'm telling you now, if I'm playing a Titleist ball, it's a damn good ball, because I was kind of like on the outs with like Titleist. Like, I'm like, oh man, the Blue Coats, you know, the PGA members, they're all like, you know, Michael Brito, he's talking about the Pro V and Pro V1. I'm just tired of hearing Titleist number one ball. And then I was like, screw it, I'm just going to join them. And so I just started playing the Pro V. I honestly, it was like, this ball fits me, I'm going to play.
Yeah, and dude. I just gave in. I have no problem saying that the TP5 ball, the TaylorMade balls, both of them, the 5 and the X, they're awesome golf balls. You don't get, I mean, like, yeah. at that point, the choice comes down to the first hop, and I have to go back to when I was 15 and we get a Titleist box. That's why I, you know, will choose a Titleist golf ball over all of them. But, you know, if I switched over to the TP5X, that's a damn good golf ball.
I'm a fan of, that would be number two in my books. Like,
they're,
you know,
good,
as far as ball.
They're good.
Yeah. Speaking of TP5, before you let me go, I'm going to take over your show for 3 seconds. Rory McIlroy, player of the year. We haven't talked about that. And I'm just going to let you know real quick before you hang up on me that I said Rory before, and it's because I'm prejudiced towards the players championship. But what about that uproar, man? Like, everyone getting so mad about it.
I don't understand that, because it's the player of the year means player of the year. So it doesn't mean, like, because the argument was like, why isn't Brooks Koepka the player of the year? And it's like, well, go apples to apples, schedule tournament to tournament. Like, yes, Brooks Koepka was like in the top two or three in every major. That's a big accomplishment. But Rory just had a better year. Like, and I have no problem saying that. And people can say, well, the only thing that matters is the majors. Sure. But they all show up at the same tournament. So like, if the only tournaments that mattered were the majors, then why does anybody play the Players Championship or the FedEx Cup? Like,
yep.
For Wikipedia, the majors matter. Like, they matter. And to these guys, the majors matter, but it's for the player of the year competition, it all matters. It's the player of the year. So who played the best from top to bottom throughout the year? And unfortunately, everybody, the tail end of the year counts too. So if you win the FedEx Cup and you win the money list and you have one of the best ball striking years, you know, arguably, you know, top 10 ball striking years of all time, you're probably going to win player of the year. And Brooks Koepka just had one of those years that just wasn't quite good enough. I think if he would have gotten a little bit more into, like, made it more dramatic in the FedEx final in the Tour Championship, then maybe he would have won. Or, you know, I don't know. But, like, Rory, in my opinion, if, you know, if I was going to give Brooks an A-, I give Rory an A, and an A is better than an A-.
Like, that's crazy how much stock everybody puts in the majors. Because I would say this. I would say that if you gave Brooks the U.S. Open or the Masters instead of the PGA,
then he wins player,
he would be
the
player of the year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because the PGA Championship, it's a major, but people don't. It's the fourth. It's always the fourth major. It's always.
I just think the players. And look, when I lived in Indiana before I even set foot in the state of Florida, I was a bigger fan of TPC Sawgrass Stadium and the Players Championship than anything. But the PGA is, like, barely, to me, and I'm not a professional golfer, but barely more important than the Players. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, yeah,
it's basically the same tournament.
It's also because in the majors, these guys are shooting 15 under par. It's that, like, the only golf tournament that you watch these days where guys might get their brains beat out is the British. Like, yep. even that they lit up, you know, like, even that I think Lowry shot way under par. So I don't know, man. It's like if you want to get into the topic of discussion, like, well, he won a major and Rory didn't. It's like, well, do you know what? Then if the majors are so important, then the player of the year should go to Tiger Woods, because Tiger Woods comeback to win the Masters and what he did at the Masters, then that was the most important win. And he had the best year because he won the Masters and he won the biggest tournament. So if winning majors is everything and you're only going to count it on the majors, then let's pick the player that played the best in one individual major. And to me, that was Tiger. The last seven holes of the Masters was, in my, and I could say Brooks's back nine when he was falling apart at the PGA Championship, like, what he did to hold it together was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But, like,
well, for sure.
What Tiger did the last seven holes when everybody dumped it in the water on 12 and he put, you know, just went full Tiger on him the last seven holes. Then let's talk, then throw his name in the hat for player of the year. Like, it's you're never going to get it right. But ultimately, in my opinion, Rory McIlroy had the best year. Like, sorry guys. Like, he won the most money and he struck the ball better than anybody. And I love Brooks Koepka. I think he's awesome for the game. And I think I would never want to play him for anything.
Nothing.
he scares me. But he is so talented. But, like, he's going to – 2020's coming, and it gives him motivation to go out and win two more majors and maybe three or four other tournaments, and then make no question that he's the player of the year. But
– yeah. I don't think these people, you know, I don't know. Maybe Brooks lets it off, you know, wrongly, but I don't think he wakes up and goes, man, I just really, my goal is to win player of the year this year. You know, so.
No, he wakes up and goes, how do I win? How do I win all four of these majors and quit? Like, that's what I think he wakes up. Like, I want to win four in a row. I want to play six times. I want to win the four majors. I want to win the Players, and I want to win, like, the Tour Championship, and then I want to quit. I want to go 6-6, and then I'll just quit and go, like, play football.
Like Suzanne Pettersen, just walk off, make the putt, and retire.
Right. Yeah, I don't – like, I'm always a weird I'm always a weird thing when they say the best, when they label something the best, because the best doesn't come along very often. But Tiger Woods was the best, hands down, right? Like, he was the best player in the game. And yep. I wrote an article about this a few months back about how the World Golf Rankings is such a stupid endeavor. It's like, because it doesn't – everybody will just know the best player in the world. If it's a debate, there isn't a best player. When there is a best player like Tiger or Michael Jordan, there's just the best player. Like, it's just there is no like, who do you think's the best player? Every person on the planet will say, like, when Tiger was playing, when people go, oh, did you ever hear in your life somebody go, oh, Tiger, you know, I don't know if he's the best player out there. Like, it was it was not even a question. It was like Tiger, and then you'd have to remember the name of another guy that might be okay. Like,
right.
Phil Mickelson was an afterthought. That's how freaking good Tiger Woods was. Like Mickelson and Ellsworth, those guys were afterthoughts.
Well, and funny enough, those are the only two people that come to mind in that era where I go, all right, so I guess those are like second best, right?
And like Duval for like an 18-month stretch is pretty awesome. But like what Tiger did from basically 1999 to 2009, if I was going to send a human being to Mars to represent humans, I would send Tiger Woods and go, this is the best we got, guys. Like,
that's fantastic.
There we go.
That's amazing.
That's what we're saying.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well,
let's end there.
Hey, dude.
I love you, brother.
Thanks for coming on my show.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for coming on the episode, Brian. I got deep affections for you, young man. I think you're good for the game and you're good for my life. And thanks for coming back on my show.
Anytime, man. Legit. So maybe in like 8 more months, we'll do it again.
We'll see how you do. If you keep growing and maturing and things are going in the right direction, I'll evaluate and watch from afar. And if I feel like, you know, we'll pat you on the bum again in 8 months, if you deserve it, then we'll bring you back on.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I actually felt a little bump on my bum bum right there.
That was the most condescending thing I've ever said to anybody in my life, by the way. But
it's amazing. It's so amazing. Rad.
Goodbye. Goodbye. All right, brother. We'll talk to you later.
See you, brother.
Yeah.